Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The show to the history.
Welcome to the Theater Podcast, intimate personal conversations with theater's biggest names. This is May, so this is the Quarren Queen Takeover. And I'm super excited to share with you that this episode is with Kala Gare, who is in the Australian cast of Six. And this is the first of several Australian cast that I am going to interview here for the Takeover. And it's my very first Aussie that I've ever had on the podcast. She's an up-and-coming performer, singer in her own right in that region. And it was actually kind of fun because being the first Aussie that I've interviewed, we got into a lot of the differences between the New York scene and the West End scene and the Sydney, you know, Australia scene. And I mean, of course, there are cultural and regional differences, but it was just really, really neat what she had to say. And we dove so far into a little bit of the science of music and vibration and what you get out of performing. And oh my God, Kala, thank you for such an enlightening and fun conversation. Kala, you are amazing. And please find me when you come to New York because we got to go out for a drink. Anyway, before we get into this, everybody, please follow me online at theater_podcast and find me online at thetheaterpodcast.com. The video, as always, of this Quarren Queen Takeover, the videos are available at ttp.fm/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Leave a rating and a review. Let me know what you like about the podcast. I want to read those ratings. And now, everybody, please enjoy this episode with Kala Gare.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Listen up, let me tell you a story.
A story that you think you've heard before.
We know you know our names and our fame and our faces.
Know all about the glories and the disgraces.
My guest today is a singer, actor, musician, and songwriter based out of Melbourne, Australia, with stage credits such as Thoroughly Modern Millie, Rent, Twelfth Night, and even Anastasia Steele in 50 Shades. She is also a classically trained musician with musical direction credits and is the lead singer of a rapidly emerging band called Legacy. She's currently Anne Boleyn in the Australian cast of Six and my very first Aussie on the podcast. Kala Gare, welcome to the Theater Podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me. I didn't realize I was first.
Yes, you are Aussie number one.
There's going to be so many. You're going to be flooded with Australians.
I hope so. Well, that's what I really want to get into in this conversation is, like, you know, how much of New York is like influential of Australia. I mean, like, there's some famous ones in the States that we've got. You know, film actors like Nicole Kidman, of course, and what's his name? Thor. I'm blanking on his name right now. Chris Hemsworth. Yeah, you know, Muscles McGee. Right. So
I know him very well.
Because like all Americans know each other. All Australians know each other, right? Yeah. So there's a couple of people that get out of that, but like I guess. Well, okay, before we get into that, where I normally start on the podcast is taking back to your childhood. And like, so where did you grow up? What was your childhood like?
Well, childhood. Well, I lived in Melbourne, have lived in Melbourne whole time. And I grew up in a very musical family. So I have both my parents are opera singers, and they actually met at the university doing an opera night course where I then trained in musical theatre, which is a very cute little... they harbored like pretty much all of the love and excitement for music that I have, because it was just everywhere growing up. Yeah.
Are you an only child?
No, I have a younger sister.
Is she into music too?
Yeah, she is. Human rights. She's on her way to being a big old lawyer.
So she's, music and singing, or music and lawyering. I guess, you know, there's, I think Legally Blonde, it was made about that. Yeah, right. So.
yeah, very, very intelligent young lady is my sister.
So was there any sort of like influential moment when you really decided you're like, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and this is where, like, you're a classically trained singer, mm-hmm. In classical piano too, you can play. So like, where did the decision come from to go down that path?
Yeah, I think because it was a constant evolution of just having music around, there wasn't a defining moment where I was like, that's what I want to do. I also, my memory is shot. I might have had that moment and it's just gone. But I do remember just always loving watching performances and watching live theater and hearing people sing and tell stories and in that way. And I think it was later, as I figured more out about what the power of theater actually is, that's when it really honed in that this is absolutely where I'm meant to be, what I'm meant to be doing, and what a journey it all is.
Right. Yeah. The journey, I mean, well, taking you on a journey though, like, where were you coming from? Was it looking for a family or looking for a home? Like, I found my belonging in theater because it was like a bunch of other kids that didn't know where they wanted to go ended up getting together, and that's where they belonged.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And absolutely, theater is a big home for so many people, and a big family. I love that. That's really beautiful. I think to a degree, and meeting people, our music program at high school was good, but unfortunately there were higher powers in the system that didn't necessarily think of it as a career move. So it was cut in certain budget places. But then when we had the school musical, that was a place for, I also went to a Catholic girls' school, so we got to meet with the boys who were also interested in that and figure out that, oh, there are other people who are also as into this as I am. What are you talking about? The coming into it, where did I come into it from? I think I really, as all of us are, that drive to get into somebody else's shoes and portray that story. And once we're that moment when you're in there and there's just, you're not, you are a part of something entirely separate, but also all to do with us and so powerful and otherworldly, that influence and power that theater has in performing to change people's emotions, to inspire, and kept coming from it from that perspective of how we can move, and with the music and movement, and the power was not power to be powerful, but the actual magic is a good word.
Yeah, it's the ability to command an audience and take them on an emotional journey. I am with you 100%. I love that. Just being able to be somebody, like, you're given a script and you develop a character. And if even like everybody puts on this great persona, and on social media now, everyone's just like, here's all my happy times. And then, you know, inside everyone is just looking to be found, and look, you know, dear Evan Hansen, there you go. You will be found. So looking to be found, looking to be identified, looking to be heard. And so you become this other person, this other creature on stage that then allows you to empathize with others, gets you empathy from others, and it is safe, right?
Safe, yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, so safe. And also the minds that are out there writing, then the brilliant minds that have been, of just this incredible material that as an actor, I feel like I'm just a vessel for something else, being on that stage. And I mean, yeah, just that. And the emotions that come out of, and that you can, there's a word for it. It's like micro something, 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 something. When you're properly in, or an experience where it's matched the audience and the actor on the stage and meeting in the middle. And that, like, it's something primal. It's something where the audience maybe cannot control, and they're with you there. That's very special.
Yeah, there's a lot of love chemicals. Like, chemically speaking, all the love chemicals in your brain, the oxytocin and the serotonin and the dopamine and all this stuff. Like, there are things that happen when you are watching people go on an emotional journey that can only happen in your brain when you're in the moment, and it's like. Yeah. You can't, like, you can imagine how you're going to act, but you can't train for that unless you're actually there. It's like, you can't train to have empathy for somebody unless you've been through those situations, right? So I totally understand, yeah, I guess, like, why you would want to be on one side of it, and why the audience, you know, why there are such passionate people who want to see it over and over and over again, and like know every word of something. And there's something that speaks to people, like the prom is a story of underrepresentation and not being seen. And again, we mentioned Dear Evan Hansen, and, you know, and I think this is actually a good transition to talk about Six. Mm-hmm. Because even though it's like Toby and Lucy, the writers, kind of like took their first inspiration from a Beyonce concert, right?
Yeah.
You know,
that was our first rehearsal as well, watching that concert.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. Yeah. So like it's about female empowerment. It's about telling six stories that are, mm-hmm. that don't get heard. I mean, we hear a little bit about Anne Boleyn, here and there, but like the rest, I didn't even know he had six wives.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, so for you, like, I guess, well, we skipped over your career stuff. We'll come back to that because I want to talk about like New York Broadway versus Australian or Aussie. Like, ask that question real fast. Is there like a version of like London's West End or New York's Broadway in Sydney or in Melbourne?
I don't necessarily think we have like a section that is like the street or that area, but we do have in Melbourne, in the CBD, there's
what's the CBD?
CBD is just the city central. So the Melbourne city is in the skyscraper area. I don't know what it's for, actually.
Downtown.
Yeah. But it's like a smaller New York. Well, it's just small. And there's the art center. And then you travel maybe like 2 minutes and then you're in the city central, and there's kind of like a box, not a block, a few blocks, and there's about three or four theatres, and that's kind of the central in Melbourne. In Sydney, there's the Opera House, but then there's a few other theatres nearby, but we don't have that like Broadway and that strip in West End, but the theatres are there.
Well, how big... Like how big is the scene? Is the theater scene like in Australia in general? Like in the U.S., you know, you've got New York theater and TV coming up with TV and film and stuff on the East Coast, and then like L.A. on the West Coast is all like that's where if you're going to shoot a movie, or at least that's what it was, right?
I believe this is coming from somebody who has only worked in Australia, but I think it's big. It feels big in it. But I do reckon if like when I went to New York and watched, it was like, oh, but this is the world of it. In Australia, it is there. And in Sydney, I think for our continent, it's big, and it's a very functioning happening. There's especially now because of COVID, a lot of, I think, more attention is being put on new stuff to bring over once this is over. But I also am in no place to talk about like the CEO of Australian theatre. I don't
know. Okay, okay. So, oh gosh, there's so much I want to ask you about. So let's go back to six, the fandom. When, like, did you know what you were auditioning for? The phenomenon that it was before you were auditioning and what it was going to be?
That's a good question. I remember, like, watching, especially at the very beginning and when they performed at the Olivier's, and seeing that kind of grandeur and this pop concert-esque, like, following on the socials, I was very much doing that. And then when the auditions came out, it was, ooh, this could be cool. But I do not in any way think I had, like, crossed the line in my mind of what it would be like if you were actually in that world. And yeah, it was a whole new world, a whole new experience. And the whole, like, fan thing, it's beautiful, but it's also a bit scary. But I was them. That was me. I was a very big fangirl for quite a lot, still am, of my career. And being like, in a very small portion, and being on the other side of that is bizarre, but also very beautiful that people feel that passionately about something.
Well, I think it's kind of fun because you guys, the cast, the Aussie cast just closed back in January, right? You closed the Sydney Opera House.
March,
yeah. You opened in, yeah. So, like, yeah. Playing at the Sydney Opera House, performing at the Sydney Opera House, you know, like, that's got to be something cool in and of itself, right? So you're doing this rock concert.
Yeah.
You know, I call it the Broadway show, right? It's a major musical in Sydney for, you know, I don't know, how many seats does it have?
So we were in the studio because six is quite well suited to an intimate theater.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, oh God, I might get this wrong, but I'm going to say no more than 200, 300 seats, potentially less.
I didn't know it had multiple theaters. I thought it was.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So there's big Jones Sutherland Theater, and that's the big one. And I'm pretty sure that's where Lizzo performed, we just missed Lizzo, but we were there for when Solange was there. And in the room, you can see everyone like working on the screens, and we're all watching Solange. But yeah, there's a few theaters because there's a Shakespeare theater as well. I think there's, aside from the studio, I'm trying to remember where the screens were because we didn't get to go into all of them. I think there might be like two or three more aside from Joan and the studio.
And so then, what was coming up? You have Melbourne, Adelaide, and Wellington that have all been postponed.
Yes.
So what's happening with those? Do you know?
No, the producers have been lovely and been in touch, but unfortunately there's just no, don't know what will happen with that. I hope that it is able to come back because it's had a run and it's got momentum behind it. And it's a very easy show to put up technically in terms of sets and lighting. But so fingers crossed on that front, but unfortunately I don't know.
Man, that stinks because it seems like this was one of four big destinations and the tidal wave was just starting to crest, you know. But I think Broadway will come back, and I think it's going to be a couple months because restaurants have to open first and transportation has to feel good and then tourists have to come. And, you know, it's a cycle. So it's going to take some time. But when it does, like, six will come back. I think it's too much of a phenomenon not to, being, you know, the second most cast album streamed other than Hamilton. And it's not even a Broadway cast yet, right? So, like, the fandom, I don't know. I mean, what do you think about it what do you think it is about the show that people are craving so much, that identify with or enjoy? Like, why stream it hundreds of millions of times?
Well, I think, I mean, there's a plethora of reasons. And doing the show and meeting Lucy, we didn't get to meet Toby, but meeting Lucy and slowly working on it. It was like, I'm going to make a comparison. Like with a Sondheim, when you are just, there's always something to unpack. and there's always something new. And when you revisit it again, you're like, oh, wow, I needed to have gone through this to then understand that. Blah, blah, blah. But that, sometime aside, this six taught me, and I was taught me about standing in your own power as well as standing with other people in their own power, and how we can do that and not in any way have to be passing. Like, you can live as a single unit and live together as single units, and no needing to cut each other down, which is the whole competition aspect of the show. And that cleverness of the writing, which when I first heard the show, I was just quite happy with it. Like, I thought, cool songs, they're catchy. But then as a writer myself, writing a catchy song is hard, let alone writing a song that just stays in your brain that much, lyrically is so clever and witty and says exactly what it wants to say in the most, pure form. Like, there's no, it doesn't have to go round in fancy circles. It's just like, he wanted me, obviously, like, bam. And it's now, it's very current, it's cheeky, and it's very unapologetic, which I think, and it just goes through so many styles as well. So you really get, you know, if you want to rock out or if you want to be a soulful pop princess, it just gives you everything. I really love it.
I actually saw the final preview the night before Broadway shut down. So I was at the show March 11th. March 12th, I'm getting my days mixed up now. It was whatever that Wednesday was, and Thursday was supposed to be opening. And and when I was watching the show, I was watching all of the girls interact with each other when they were backing up the lead singer, like whoever whoever solo it was, because everyone seemed to be having so much fun interacting with each other when they weren't in the spotlight, right? And so is that a show thing? Like, was that just a Broadway thing? Are you, like, you and your cast, are you guys all like super tight like this?
Well, it's kind of brilliantly, again, because it's only six people, it's so intimate in that sense. And I don't know, this is down to excellent casting as well, especially I feel like worldwide, but I can absolutely speak for the Australian cast. We are all beautiful, beautiful women. And that play on that stage, there's something about that interaction with the audience as well that creates this new, you're constantly dealing with stimulus, but also you got mates all around you and on stage with you. You're dressed in this fierce costume. The lights are crazy. Music is pumping. It's hard to not have a very fun time on that stage because you're allowed to. It's written in. And like, we have, you know, the scenes are all little quippy bits, but so much of it is left to this like atmosphere that is created by this show that's just like
it's a concert. It's a rock, it's a pop concert.
Exactly. Psycho.
Yeah, it seems like so much fun. And you know, for a show like Hamilton's fun. It's got some serious moments. There are shows that like just go to a place every night. And I talked about this with Elizabeth Stanley from Jagged Little Pill too. Like, I don't know if you know anything about the show at all, but it deals with white privilege and sexual assault and substance abuse. And it's a heavy show. Like, it's all just the things that people need to start talking about, like all in this 2.5 hour musical. And and you know, we talked to her like, how do you, you know, you're this victim, you know, your character's been raped and your daughter happens to her, and then the neighbor's daughter, and then the son is accused of, you know, like, I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but it's a heavy show. And I'm like, how do you go there 8 times a week and come back and be a normal person? And you know, Dear Evan Hansen too, like, you know, we were just hearing Andrew Barth Feldman talk about you know, he and Michael Park like would goof off backstage. Like, you got to keep it light, but then like, you guys you get to take all of that fun and bring it onto mm-hmm. the stage and show yeah. it and break the fourth wall because you are interacting with the audience.
Hugely.
And it just seems like so much fun. Like the feedback, are you getting feedback? I mean, you're saying like you're getting used to being in the spotlight now a little bit. You're on the other side of being a fan and following things now. So you have people following you. Are you getting like feedback that was unexpected, or are you getting stories that you didn't expect to hear?
Yes and no. Like there are some beautiful stories of Six really helped me find my voice, and thank you for your portrayal of Berlin, and thank you for I had so much fun, and those sorts of things. When you get that back, that's like a wow, especially when they're specific. That's a big like, whoa, this is really cool. I haven't had too many moments that like that, but the ones that are there, they're very special.
Is there stage? Go ahead.
Sorry. No. Were you about to talk stage door?
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask about like stage dooring, if it's the same is it like culturally the same in Australia as it is in New York? Because like stage door has now become part of the ticket price. You just kind of expect to meet the cast afterwards.
Which, as a fan, so cool. As a performer, not as much of a cultural thing. However, on Six, we had to kind of adhere to the fact that it was kind of written in the ticket price, and that's what they expected to do. Like we had the stage door for the Sydney Opera House is the stage door for every theatre, so you'd have heaps of different performers walking out. But because it wasn't a huge cultural thing, we didn't really have anything set up in terms of like bollards or any structural thing outside. And leaving the Opera House, you just walk out and then you're there in public mm-hmm. and just in where anyone can go to, which I guess is the same as on the street in the theatre. But it was a very bizarre, like just coming out, especially having not been in having to deal with fans in this way before, and people coming into your personal space and being very excited, but sometimes very overwhelming. It was a really big kind of adjustment to still be on and still be present after the show. And what I wanted to touch on was the fun is excellent in there, but Six is one of the shows that it's like it's written in that you have to be at energy 100%. Like without it, it's kind of it's very obvious because there's only six of you and the lights and the glitter and everything is on. If you're not, you can really tell. So the act that there was a challenge in a different way of maintaining that energy 9 shows a week and keeping that a constant thing, which then meant when we would come off stage and go to the stage door, it was zombies, especially on our 9th show. And that whole balance of these people who have paid a lot of money to come and see this show and who have waited for so long sometimes there, and you're just like a sweaty 75 minutes of cardio leaving the building kind of just... It was a funny, like, whoa, okay, gotta figure out what world this is now.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So you said 9 shows a week. Is that for 6 or is that standard Australian show schedule?
It's becoming more standard as it goes on.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof. That's yeah. Like 8, I thought 8 was hard. Like, you know, my friends on Broadway are like, oh, God, 2-show day, man. It's a Saturday. You know, but like, so when do you do the 9th show?
Have 2 show days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it was so, okay, we'd go a 6:45 and an 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday. And then Sunday was a 3 p.m. and a 6 p.m. Putting a 3 p.m. matinee as your 5th show on a 6-day, on a 3-day weekend was the most painful thing, because that's when we had the matinee crowd and that's when we like needed all the help we could get. And the matinee crowd, oh God, trying to be so energetic and it's just like hitting the wall.
Oh,
but
gosh.
Miracles happen on Sundays, especially when you're doing 6 shows. We'd somehow just...
Oh man.
Came and kissed us.
That's horrible. Like, yeah, we do, you know, normally here we do like 2 Wednesdays, 2 Saturdays, and then you've got your 1 on Sunday and you're done. But to put 5 shows or 3 double show days in a row seems just like torture. God. Yeah, especially by the end of Sunday, you just want to go home and just take a bath and chug some wine and go to sleep for a day.
Well, that was the other thing with 6 is because we were in Sydney, I'm based in Melbourne. I really had the opportunity to pretty much focus entirely all of my energy to it because I didn't have much connection in Sydney. And I think that was a godsend because I literally needed to give it all of my time and energy. With the 9 shows, it was such a good learning thing of how to, like, 6 taught me so much about sustenance because it's so vocally demanding, physically demanding, and just the actual energy spending. I would go home from the theater, the next morning I'd be preparing, do the show, come home, recover, repair, do the show. And that was kind of life up until maybe like the last 2 weeks, where then during the days I was like, maybe I can start. It's becoming a bit more of a routine now. Yeah. Challenges in its own way.
Right. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I, my listeners are so tired of hearing me say this probably, but I've said like Broadway performers are the Olympians of theater.
Athletes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
The best of the best have to be athletes. Even if you have a track where you just plant and bark, then you're still like vocally demanding, you know, vocal injury. The stigma is kind of being destigmatized now. There's been a lot happening locally on Twitter. Like Casey Levy came out and Alex Brightman, of course, like he's talking about his voice for Beetlejuice and how he had to make that comfortable so he doesn't have injuries. And there are so many people that you would think of, like George Salazar, actually, I was talking to him once from Be More Chill. And he was like, yeah, I hemorrhaged during a preview and I thought my career was over. And
goodness,
like you have to, I mean, even Olympic athletes pull muscles, right? So you have to be conditioned either vocally and cardiovascularly, whatever it is. But I'm with you. It's hard. It's hard. It's tough. You got to take care of yourself. It's a lifestyle that everybody wants, and then they get it and like, oh crap. wait, really?
Which is good.
I think I'm good. I think this is what I want. Yeah, okay, get on stage, do it again. Yeah. But it was interesting to me for you specifically, because I was looking through your Instagram. And you posted a lot of videos of like, in your album too, that you've got two EPs out, right?
Just one, just working on
two. Working on a second, okay. Yeah, so you've got music and I was listening to it and it's like, it's slow and it's jazzy and it's very sultry for lack of kind of a better word. I interpret it as being kind of sultry. And then even like a lot of the stuff I was watching on Instagram was still not in the style of Six, was not pop. And
yeah.
So I guess, like, did you audition? I mean, have you always been able to sing multiple styles, or were you training for something specifically, like the jazz and the classical and the and whatnot? Or is it all just kind of technique?
Yeah, well, I guess to answer this, I have to go, well, my mom is a singing teacher. So I already had a real advantage, and very lucky there. She, from like the womb, was singing to me, and as a baby, like la 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 at 2 months old, and I'd be like, what? Like just constantly. And I think that idea of pitch and note relationships and that all was there very early age. And I like began playing piano from a young age as well. And so the kind of relationship of music was there, which meant that when I began singing, I didn't have to worry about like pitch and those sorts of technical elements. They were kind of naturally there. And I learned in terms of technical singing legit first. That sort of was where I lent and was trained, like, not in the way like if you went to school and learned that. It was a very relaxed thing, which I think also led to a love of singing, because it wasn't so what's the word I'm looking for, like rigid. There was a period where it did have to be, and my mom was my teacher, and that was really hard, especially as a teenager. That was big times, but we learned, we got there. But I always had a love of singing and a love of producing sound and playing with that. And as I continued with theatre, I at uni really developed belting and the louder sounds, and I would love that. And a lot of my technical issues came from loving the sound, but not really being able to do it, but just doing it anyway. And now having to figure out how to actually do it with ease and get that all there. But I always could cross training was a big thing. So the legit, and then going on the other scale and doing a rock song. And I loved practicing both of those. But when I was singing for myself, and what I enjoyed singing, it was more of soulful and more that organic, slower sound, which I've never thought of before in that way. But now you've pointed that out, that, yeah, that's a lot of my writing as well, is that sort of slower stuff.
Soulful. I have no idea what. Soulful, yeah, that's a better word than sultry. Soulful, it seems to me to be very, very introspective, expressive. You can tell when I'm listening to your music, I can tell that it comes from you, and it's not like I was told to sit down and write a song right now.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's very nice. But as on that, like, sit down and write a song, that's something I love to talk about with writing. Is the way I love to write is, it's quite a open experience, and usually when I try to sit down and write something with the intention of writing something, the work that comes out is never as fluid and nice. Nice is such a, if you did I explain that in any way,
that when you sit down you're like, all right, I'm gonna write a song, it doesn't come out authentic.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. Well, in my experience thus far.
Yes, for you. What do you think about? What do you put into your songs that you can't express in other ways? Like, that has to be in song form?
I've never thought about it like that either. I did make a connection that I think that it's a sort of a therapy, in the sense of an emotion that is there and comes out in the form of a song, but that's also a way of clearing that from myself. I'm not entirely sure how to answer that. That is so profound.
Well, good. I'll give you something to go write about.
Yeah, I'm gonna come. Like, you'll see, like, the next album. This was inspired by Alan.
There's so many people. There are a lot of people that I like, and that's the kind of music that I really. That I like to listen to. It's that I feel like, and maybe I'm jumping around in my head. Gosh, yeah. What I was going to say was that this is the music I like to listen to. It's that I can feel like it's something that authentically came from the person who sat down to write it, and it's not made by a machine. Like, I don't like the pop factory that's producing content, which is. Funny and ironic because I like Six. Six is pop, so I'm not dissing on the pop genre, but I mean, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're trying to say, because I think there is a difference. You can stylistically have a pop song, but it still has the authenticness and the honesty in it.
Yeah,
it could still have that dirty beat, but there's something in it, and that's the part about music that is so, that I am enchanted by, in like, you can't really explain it and you don't really know. I don't really have the words to describe that, but there's just something that you connect with and that is floating around that can be transported by notes and a melody and harmony. And a really cool person that I've just like put all my energy to is Jacob Collier. And yeah, the way he speaks about it is beautiful. Do you know much of Jacob Collier?
Not much, no. No, I've heard his stuff.
Yeah. If you want to like to dive into a musical wonderland.
We're kind of going off the rails and I love it and it's fine. But I, my background being in like choral music and boys choirs and things, I love it. I love tight harmonies and I love harmony. Maybe that's what it is. That's part of why I like Six, because it's six women singing together, six people. And like the soloist stuff often I don't get into because I want to feel the overtones building on each other. Because when you have multiple voices like that, then they are like, when you look at a waveform on a, what's it called? The histograph? What am I thinking of? You know, where you can see a waveform, an audio waveform. Like you can see, like you've got your primary note, and then you've got the fifth and the third and the octave that are there, and you could barely hear them. And when you add them up in multiple voices, then you can start hearing the other things clearly, even though no one's singing it. Did you know about this?
No.
Oh yeah. So I was in a room full of 100 guys. Yeah, that's how all my stories start. So I was in a room. We were in a room. I was in a chorus. It was like some all-state chorus in high school or something. And we were in a room, and it was 100 of us or so. And it was, and the teacher was explaining this to us, the conductor, and he said, you know, everyone just sing this note. He's like, and everyone sang this note. And the idea was that we had to sing it long enough so that the wave, all of our voices, the waveforms would come off the walls and bounce back, and it was just bouncing back and forth off the room because it was echoing, and. If you were to look at, you know, the wave, the we'll call it, I think it's a histograph. I'm pretty sure that's what I'm trying to say, is, you know, we're singing the note, and it's the biggest peak in the waveform. And then the fifth, you started hearing the fifth, like as if someone was singing harmony, like clear as day. You could just hear it. And all of us were like, are you singing that? Are you singing that? We all look at each other and we were like, no, I'm not singing that. Are you singing that? And then he's like, keep going. You'll start hearing the third, because it had to build on each other. It's like, you know, when two waves come into each other in the ocean, they get bigger. They amplify each other. So it's the same thing with audio and in the physics side of audio and singing is you can hear the fifths and the thirds, the harmonies. And it's, anyway, I've digressed a lot, but that's why I like choral voices, because without doing it on purpose, you're building the overtones without really doing it like specifically. And it just sounds, it's a richer tone. It's a fuller tone.
Wow.
So that's my rant.
What? That's amazing. I really, this, that, like, you would vibe with Jacob Collier.
Tell him to give me a call. I'm happy to chat.
Yeah. If I had his number.
Yeah, the physics behind singing has always been fascinating. I mean, I'm a nerd in that way anyway. So
yeah, I love that.
The physics behind singing.
I'm trying to learn more about the science behind harmony, especially. Mm-hmm. Especially like I can hear so much, but my skill, especially with the piano, like what I can hear and my ear is up here and my piano skill is like down here, and I want to bring it up so I can be that person that can sit at the piano and be like, I hear this cool chord, but I don't have that skill. And learning about, literally, I was literally just watching a video on the major triad and then building that up and layering chords on top of each other and how when you have a tension to resolve, but it can blah, 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 everything. That's really exciting that you just spoke about.
do you feel like it hurts your body when a chord is not resolved? Like at the end of a song? Yeah.
I've been known to just sneakily jump to the piano and be like, resolve. Because you can't leave it like that.
I know. I'm just like, oh God, that's just a tease. It's painful. It's almost physically painful just to not to resolve a suspension. It's like, oh God. And oh geez, I miss my calling. I know nothing about music theory. I just I can do beats. I can do like the rhythm because like it's math and I'm okay. I'm good at math, but like when it came to theory, I've never learned theory. I'm always like, every good boy deserves fudge. Okay, F. Okay, that's
on a fudge. I love that.
What do you guys say?
Fruit.
Oh, it's fudge. Yeah, we're all about obesity here. Yeah, every good boy deserves fudge.
Whoa, I love that. Every good boy deserves fudge.
yeah, fudge, fruit, food. Every good boy deserves footies. I don't know. It's slippers. I would love to just sit down and I like to plunk down chords on the piano and just see what feels good, because I don't I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm playing. I just like, you know, hear it. And I think
ear is so important. Ear is half of it, if not more than half of it. That's where I'm at as well with just playing notes and being like, ooh, this sounds cool. But I'd love that knowledge to be like, okay, this sounds cool because I'm playing these notes and they would sound cooler than to resolve in this way, and that sort of theory behind it. But that, the idea, even like how you just said maths as a for beats, I love that music can be like that as well, that it can be that technical and cold and then also like undescribable and philosophic, and it's everything.
What comes first for you? Is it the lyrics, the music, or the need to have self therapy?
Well, I like to the way I describe how I write as well is and this is sort of what I mean about that openness, is that I feel as though I am a vessel for this song that has been written already, and I'm just, it's coming from somewhere else. And there's been experiences where I will be fine, having a great day, and then be filled with this sadness. And then I like to think of it as birthing a song, and then I'm okay afterwards again. Like it's, that sadness wasn't mine, but it's then transformed into a song. And that way of looking at it, I hear melody and lyrics together. Though the melody, I would say, is a bit more solid, because sometimes the lyric, like I'll go up on the internet and be like, what rhymes with aim? And that's so that the lyric isn't as set in stone. And the melody is also fluid, but when I'm chucking voice memo on and just singing into my phone, it's lyric and melody together.
Yeah, That's interesting to me. I sat down before and tried to write songs like way when I was younger. And I don't know. I don't have any music in my head. When I sit down to write, like I will have sometimes lyrics in my head, but no music. And then I'll finish a verse and I'm like, I have no idea what to do with this. And so sometimes I'll think of some rhymes and, you know, I did improv in college. So I can think of things that rhyme with other things, and that's not a problem. I just have no idea how to make it sound good. And so, like, you know, coming back and listening to the science behind music. I was going to ask you if you have watched, if you have Explained, have you ever watched Explained on Netflix, that show? Mm-mm. So there's an original that they have called Explained, and it's just half an hour episodes explaining a different subject. Like one is cricket, one is cannabis, one is the wealth gap, one, you know, there are other things. And one of the most interesting episodes was music explained. And like humans as a species, I it's been a while since I've seen this, so I'm probably getting this wrong, but I think even primates, or maybe it's apes versus monkeys, I don't know, one of the two. Humans as a species, I think, are one of the only species that can predict rhythm and melody.
So whoa!
So you can get, like birds can repeat a melody, like, but if you change the key, they have to relearn the whole thing. It's a completely new song to them. And so, and most animals, most species in general, cannot predict rhythm. They can't, like, they can repeat dun, 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 but they can't, like, if you don't dun, 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 they can't do the syncopation or whatever it is. And, like, that's a fascinating, you would really enjoy it. It's a fascinating episode about, like, the brain science of music. And, like, some people have strokes and they can't talk, but they can sing. What that's all about. Yeah.
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 I will be watching that.
Yeah. It's what? Really incredible. So what
interesting, like, interesting test to have done. Like, that would be really cool to be that scientist being like, all right, let's go play some music for some animals, Faye.
Yeah. Well, they had, like, all these monkeys and different types of birds. And, you know, the birds that are mimicking things, they don't know that it's music. Like, it doesn't register as music. It's just mimicking a sound. And so the ability to register as a note, their brain cannot do that.
Yeah. Wow. My mind goes to, like, you know, history, and that we've been brought up with all of this, and like the culturalness that music has and all those roots. And yeah, the idea of, wow, that is a defining element of a human being. That's really cool. I will definitely be watching that.
Yeah. Dancing and music goes back, you know, thousands of years. I mean, you've got, anyway, I'm nerding out. So, well, we'll wrap up this episode here with the three standard closing questions that I ask everybody on the podcast. And the first one, very simply, is what motivates you?
Very simply?
Very simply asked. Very complex in your answer.
What motivates me to perform, to live, to
interpret however you want.
What motivates me? Wow. I'll answer what motivates me to perform. And I think what we touched on at the beginning of that idea of the family that theatre has and the family that theatre welcomes you to, and the as an audience member and as a performer and as everybody else that is involved in the world, and the ability to transport to another plane and to raise awareness of things, but that moment and that energetic transaction between people, live, imperfect, flawed, brilliant people. That's what motivates me.
I love that. Okay, so the next question is, what advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now starting out down a similar path?
These questions. wow, okay. Well, younger me, and then lots of younger people. Oh, okay. A big one that I learned that I wish I had learned sooner, and this was more to me in my teens during uni, and I think is very relevant to starting out, especially when you're learning and playing, the idea of trying as hard as you can to be kind of focused on your learning and to really not care about the what you look like and if it's wrong. I had a beautiful mentor say to me at the beginning, Carla, just fail, but fail gloriously. Where else can you fail but at uni and or drama school and where you're meant to be learning? And I lost a lot of my first year in trying to be right and trying to be whatever I thought was right or be liked or all of those wonderful teenage things. I would just say, in terms of learning, to really give yourself the time and allow yourself to be whatever you need to be in that moment and lean into the uncomfort, because on the other side of that is something that you never would have got if you hadn't.
Lean into the uncomfort. I love that. That's your new quote right there. Okay, so so the final question here, the hardest one. If you could only see one show for the rest of your life, but you could see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
I would see Six the Musical.
Which production?
Oh, what? All of them.
All of them in rep.
One screen, because we'll be here for a while.
Okay. So where can we connect with you online?
Instagram is probably the best one. Is that, I don't even know what my handle is.
K.Gare, right? K.Gare?
Yeah. That sounds right.
K.Gare. It'll be in the show notes. It'll be in the episode notes, so you can find it there. Cool. So you can get more of me at thetheaterpodcast.com. Please show your support for the podcast at thetheaterpodcast.com/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at theater_podcast. Please leave a rating, leave a review. And this is edited by Matthew Hendershot. And Carla, thank you. This has been so much fun. I've really enjoyed this chat.
Me too. This is awesome. And I wish you luck with all your new Australian members. <Letting you. laughs>
Take a deep breath, make the world a little colorful.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.